Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, we talked about recycling. Now we're going to talk with a guest about the very beginning of that cycle before we have to recycle or throw things away. We first buy them. And our guest today is going to talk a little bit about how that has changed, why we buy, how that's changed in recent decades, and a whole lot more. Nancy Wong, our guest today, a professor of consumer science in the University of Wisconsin School of Human Ecology. She's also the Consumer Science Department Chair, and she holds the Kohl's Chair in Retail Innovation. And she's really interested in understanding how consumers make choices that could impact their health and financial well-being, and also to promote environmental sustainability. So what do you think? Does our society buy more things than ever before? If so, why do you think that is? You consider yourself a conscientious consumer? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Nancy Wong, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for inviting me. Happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you with us today. Well, we often hear words like materialism used to describe our culture. Do you think we live in a materialistic society today?
We absolutely do. Unfortunately, I guess the rise of materialism is often, I think, in conjunction with, growth in industrialization. And I guess as the population move from move from rural to urban areas. So those are all the factors in terms of the macro factors that actually lead to a rise in, I think, materialism. So that's kind of almost an inevitable trend from that standpoint.
Yeah, and it hasn't always been that way. And some of that may go back to maybe the 30s and when we went through some dark times, and financially a lot of people were out of jobs, sort of like what they are now. But there was a lot more emphasis on using everything, was there not?
Yes, that definitely was the case. And I think perhaps what we really need to think about is the concept and the ideas of materialism in and of itself. I guess there are different forms of materialism, almost seems to speak. And I think, and it's often tied to be or pitched as the opposite of frugality, which it may not really be the case. And sometimes it is associated with the notion of luxury consumption. So, and I think that actually can have different implications depending on how you think about what should be the good life and what does being materialistic mean. And I think it is perhaps time for us to rethink what it means to actually consume. I'm for the idea of buying better and consuming better rather than just talking about being frugal. Because I guess, sometimes you heard of the phrase, what is it, penny wise and pound foolish?
Yeah.
Sort of some of the things that you buy that seems to be a frugal choice, a cheaper alternative today because it costs you less money. But I guess longer term, it ends up costing us more because of more waste generated from things being being discarded away very quickly because they are not actually well-made. And, various other kind of consumption habits that we have gotten into in terms of the kind of planned obsolescence that is being done by manufacturers. So I would say that in order to actually tackle the decision of overconsumption and thinking about the environment, we need to actually start from ground zero, is really thinking about what is it that we are buying here. So it's something that I would like to challenge our consumers to think about.
Yeah, what are we buying? Well, you know, and this day and age, there's a lot of people that are have been out of work suddenly and don't have, and or maybe have always been lower income, and so you look at, okay, I've got a shirt here I can buy for $3, but there's another shirt over here for $10. Well, I'm going to buy the $3 shirt because I don't have the money for the $10 shirt.
Yes, yes. That, I think, is definitely a challenge that we're faced with, I think, in today's environment. And hence, I think the new frugality and thinking about repurposing and reusing some of the things that we already have on hand, you know, makes, I think, great sense from that standpoint. But I guess, you know, longer term is, I guess, I'm thinking about what goes beyond, you know, this pandemic. You know, is that going to help us change our behavior and rethink about how we want to move forward with this?
Yeah. It wasn't too long ago that I read Tom Brokaw's book, The Greatest Generation, I think, was the title of it. And he talks about that generation and its buying habits. And do you see those differences in buying habits of different generations?
Yes, definitely. And I think it has to do with the generation that grew up at the time of what we call, I think, economic deprivation. And that actually does have a long-term impact on our subsequent, I think, spending behavior. So I myself have done some research in this because I guess that's how we contrast the generations that grew up during the Great Depression versus, I think, the consumption habits of the next generations who actually grew up at the time of plenty. And that's how we acquired the kind of spending habits and what we would so-called materialistic lifestyles that we have subsequently enjoyed for the next, I would say, 5-6 decades.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, and I think that that has a long-lasting impact. So I guess I would actually have to say that for the Gen Z who grow up in this current, I think, situations may have, you know, may actually learn to adapt to a different way of life. And I think, you know, given the kind of economic and environmental upheavals that we are faced with today. And I think that their values is going to actually, I think this is probably the generations where things are going to change, which is probably a good thing.
Oh, well, I can think back to my own youth, you know, being frugal, creative, reusing of things was really important. People didn't throw things away. Mm-hmm. And we've really lost some of that frugality of the past, haven't we?
Yes, we have. But I think but the tide is turning. I actually, you know, looking at this generation of students in school and all that, I actually think that there is a much greater consciousness about, you know, how our actually consumption behavior is having a serious impact on the environment as well as our own, you know, financial well-being in this case.
All right. Our guest today is Nancy Wong, professor of consumer science at the UW School of Human Ecology. And it's great to talk with her about materialism and consumer habits through the decades. What about you? What do you think about did you grow up in a frugal household? You still practice some lessons of frugality today? Maybe social media, this is something else I want to explore with our guest today. Does the social media or the internet influence people and what they buy? Does it influence you? I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. We're going to take a look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with our guest, Nancy Wong, and she'll be with us right up until 12:30 today to take your questions and comments. So stay with us. We'll be back with our guest, Nancy Wong, right after this look at the news. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for being with us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about consumer culture on the show with our guest, Nancy Wong. Nancy, a professor of consumer science at the UW School of Human Ecology. She's also the Consumer Science Department Chair and holds the Kohl's Chair in Retail Innovation. Give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Do you practice some of the lessons of frugality that you might have grown up with? Or what about social media or the internet? How does that influence what you buy? Love to hear from you. Again, email at ideas@wpr.org or phone 800-642-1234. And Nancy, we have some callers online. Let's take a few calls. Ron in La Crosse, we'll go to you first. Hi, Ron. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'm just calling to let you know. I go back to the 1950s when I was a kid. Dad would buy a whole case of returnable bottles in a store called the South Avenue Beer Depot in La Crosse. You know, a whole case of returnable beer bottles, and of course he'd get a deposit back. And the same was with the old glass Coca-Cola bottles. We kept a wood tray of them in the garage. You know, the old green tinted bottles that had the logo embossed in them.
Yeah.
And then another business called the Pop Doc, and they used to take their cellar pop and returnables.
Good points, Ron. Why did that go away, Nancy? A lot of that's gone away, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. You know, I also remember actually that I, even as a graduate student, when I used to go to the stores and buy soft drinks, and especially the cans, you know, they used to charge you a bottle and a can deposit. So you actually bring those bags and then in return for that exchange. And to be perfectly honest, I'm not sure why that all went away, because that was actually a very good practice. And of course, you know, you still have that practice, I think, in some of the other states, because I remember seeing that in places like New York and some of the other places, I think a lot of the times people actually make a livelihood out of just collecting these bottles and cans and taking them to the recycler.
Yeah, well, that's right. Ron, thank you. Katie in Eau Claire, we'll go to you next. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Larry. I am so excited to be on your show. I listen and quote you often.
Thank you.
My journey with frugality started about 7-8 years ago when I had my daughter, and she first took a bath in our bathtub, and I was looking at the ingredients of the cleaners that I was using for the bathtub, and it kind of made me disgusted. And so my first brush with frugality is making my own cleaners in my house. But what I really wanted to think about and wanted to talk about, and hopefully your guests can enlighten me a little bit on the subject, is we have TVs and we have refrigerators and all these appliances in our houses. And it seems that the appliances that are 20 years old or 30 years old are better made than the ones that are currently being produced. And the ones that are currently being produced are really hard to get fixed. And I'm wondering if she could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Nancy, comment?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Lily, thank you for that question, because that has I mean, I have the same major peeve about products such as the ones that you've been talking about, because I really think that I think many of these products were actually very cheaply manufactured and being so cheaply, and so that it becomes a lot easier for people to just throw away things and to buy new stuff. And I often actually complain about the fact that that is because the full environmental cost of these productions are not really reflected in the price that you pay as a consumer. And so I guess I can't remember what the exact method, what it is called, because it's a life cycle accounting of the products that you use. And, you know, oftentimes I think the environmental cost is actually higher than what you actually pay for. So, and I guess, you know, that encourages, I think, a kind of consumption behavior that is just buying and disposing of things very quickly. And I hope there is actually a return to something that is actually better made, but it could well be more expensive as well too. So that, I think that is the downside of that particular trend. And I'm actually reminded of a saying that I actually heard from a good German friend who said that, you know, who told me that they have this saying in Germany that I am too poor to be cheap. And I think the notion is that, you know, you are better off buying something that is well made of high quality and you can use it for a long time to come and be able to actually repair them and to continue to use it. So I think perhaps the new frugality should include looking at our consumption decision that way.
Yeah. Katie, thank you so much for calling. Well, Ryan in Superior, we'll go to you now. Hi, Ryan. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have an interesting experience from being, I guess, the last generation to grow up in a time of prosperity, like the late 90s, in which there was a lot of, like, economic prosperity and all that, and then experience the downturns that we've had in this next century that have plagued our society. And I think, and I hear a lot of people talking about this particular subject and about, like, you know, we need to be able to live more frugally. And I agree with that. I think that my parents grew up as, you know, part of the baby boomers. They lived with a lot of prosperity, and they're kind of expecting that that's supposed to exist for everybody and continuously do so. But, of course, that's not happening with this era. You know, times change. But I think that in this conversation, as everyone starts to enforce the idea, push the idea of frugality, they're not. I would also like to add a little of their caveat. Like, yeah, I think that people need to live more frugally to better protect the environment and what we have, but they should also demand and expect more. Because right now, ever since the economic downturn, although all of our corporations and producers and product makers have seen some pretty good success despite all this, everything that we've been receiving is just junk. It's just the quality of even just the most simple of products, like clothing, stuffed animals, or electronics and all that sort of stuff, just continues to just go down.
Well, Ryan, I thank you very much for calling. Comment from our guest here. What do you think, Nancy?
I completely agree with his comments, because I think living frugally is one thing, but then it also doesn't mean that you actually have to buy cheap stuff. I think the unfortunate thing is that what has happened is, I think during our time of plenty, things have certainly become a lot cheaper, but then they are also much poorer made. And I think we need to actually vote with our dollars as consumers to actually buy things that are better made. We may not pay less for them, but we are going to be able to enjoy them for a longer period of time, and we end up actually having a more frugal and simpler lifestyle than before.
Yeah. Let's Brian, thanks again. Reggie in Oshkosh kind of has something I think that goes along with what Ryan was saying. Reggie, hi.
Hi there. But I grew up really.
Oh, Reggie's breaking up. I've got a little sense for what he was going to say. He grew up in the 90s, and you could repair your own car in your yard. Mm-hmm. But the newer cars they design, you need special tools, and you need to take it in to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And there's some of that going on as well, isn't there, Nancy?
Yes, absolutely. Because I guess increasingly cars are driven by different kind of computer chips and requires really sophisticated, I think, electronic systems compared to, you know, the simple mechanical equipment that we're used to dealing with. And a lot of the times, I think in a way it is a kind of planned obsolescence in the sense that, you know, you need to continue to upgrade either your microchips or, you know, the software that runs certain things in order to run them better. And sometimes you are almost forced to actually upgrade to a newer model just because the older model is no longer supported, even though everything else about that model still continues to work. So, yes, there is a lot of that going on.
Yeah, there is indeed. And then there's just the little extras. If you have to update your computer, well, you can't use the same cords and so forth. They're all new cords. And you know, it'd be nice if you could at least be able to use some of those, but that's kind of seems to be built right into the whole process.
It is. So that, no. I think, the escape from big tech is kind of a very different, I think, proposition that may well require, I think, policy changes from Congress in order to make things like that happen. Although we must admit that, you know, those technological innovations and upgrades, I mean, they do actually bring about much more superior performance as well. So,
yeah.
And in fact, sometimes
true.
It leaps and bounds. So that is actually a very different proposition compared to, you know, having simpler life in terms of the clothing that we wear and reusing and recycling things, which I think we really ought to do. And I think it is pushing us in the right direction. But electronic gadgets is quite something else altogether.
Well, Frank in Duluth, Minnesota has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Frank.
Yes, good morning. Hey, thanks for having my call here. I totally agree with the things that your guest is talking about here. And I grew up with my dad out of the Depression, and I'm a son of a Depression-era person, and we did everything ourselves. I mean, everything you wanted. Your first thought was, do I have something I can make it from? How do I make it? How do I reuse something I have? But I recently read a book by Yvon Chouinard. He's the founder of Patagonia. And the book is Let My People Go Surfing. And he talks about making products that are durable, functional, and recyclable. And he talks a lot about how to use human capital properly mm-hmm. from societies around the world, where to source materials from, where to have them built, and how to pay the people, have their society function where they're at. And it's just an outstanding book. I think he was a visionary of his time. The book was mm-hmm. first published in 2005. Rewritten in 2016, and I found it very, very enlightening and just astounding. And he makes the comment in there that unlike other businesses, they do better during times of recession. And I hope it's the same this time around, because people buy one good product instead of like the $3 shirts you're talking about earlier.
Yeah,
they might buy the $70 shirt, but they might have it for 10 years, 15 years. When it turns into rags, I don't know if Patagonia does this anymore, but you could return it to them for recycling. And they can recycle the fibers on the synthetic materials, whatever they use in their products. So,
yeah, good points, Frank. Nancy, are you familiar with that book, Let My People Go Surfing?
Absolutely. I love that book. I could not agree with him more. And I still have my Patagonia jackets from when I was a graduate student. I use that for my example to everybody about how to consume better and more wisely. You know, it wasn't the cheapest jacket that I bought as a graduate student. I could have bought something cheaper, but I wouldn't have it today.
Yeah, very good points there. Frank, thank you so much. Well, Rose in Menominee Falls has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Rose.
Hi there. I have two issues. One is I resent being manipulated by retailers with all the coupons and rebates and cashback stuff and all of that. And I know for a fact that some of that is inflated. And so I've gotten to a point where I almost refuse to shop at places like those that give out all those things. And the other quick thing is, it is so frustrating to go to a retailer and just need one simple item, like a box of cereal or a tube of toothpaste, and you have a whole aisle full of these things, and you end up more confused than when you went. And I just look at these things and think, if this isn't overconsumption, I don't know what is.
Well, so many choices. Nancy, comment.
Well, I think, you know, I would like to actually take the side of the retailers just for a minute, because I think retailers or marketers in terms of store designs or different kind of promotions are designed to serve the customers. And I guess they compete on being able to serve the customers better than their competitors. So I guess ultimately, the way we choose to buy is the way that we reward that particular effort. So I would encourage customers to feel that, you know, if you really think that this is detrimental to you, you need to exercise that with where your dollars go to. So I guess, you know, it is a vicious cycle in some ways, because we reward marketers for giving us the best deals. So naturally, they are going to come out to each other with coming up with the next best deals and the best display to tempt you into buying more. I guess it is a two-way street.
But it is, it can be a little bit confusing. And we haven't gotten into too much to the social media side of it, but I'm on Facebook, for example. I have a Facebook page, and the number of little product advertisements that get stuck into Facebook pages is amazing. And you look at that and think, yeah, you know, that it would be a useful device for me to have. And usually I just take a pass. Okay, I'll think about that and maybe go back to it later, and then I don't. But there are so many ways that we are tempted these days, aren't there?
Yes, we are. And I just had a friend who was complaining to me about, you know, on Facebook, saying that, can we just stop this already, you know, because they're chasing you from site to site. And it's not just on Facebook, because the minute you spend some time to browse on any particular site, or if you happen to look at something, we would pick up that cookie trails and then we'll just follow you and bombard you mercilessly with these ads to remind you that, oh, you just look at this and it's still here.
I think
there is really no way of stopping that, I think, phenomenon unless you actually sort of like maybe clear your cache every time, you know, diligently, and not to leave any kind of cookie crumbs behind for the retailers to chase you.
Judith in Milwaukee, your turn now. Hi, Judith. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. I'd like to suggest that an excellent way to be frugal and environmentally responsible is to do some or even most of your shopping in thrift stores and charity shops. It's a wonderful way to help recycle the things that are in there. It's often a way to afford brands that you might never be able to afford to buy in a retail store. And I think that many people who have never shopped in a thrift store don't know what the environment is like. It can be very welcoming. They're clean and well organized. It might depend on what kind of shop you go to, and maybe your first experience you won't find one that you like, but shop around. I like Goodwill, I like Value Village, I like several church thrift stores, and I feel well dressed, and I have nice things around my house, and I also can feel very good about what I'm doing.
Yeah. Comment on that, Nancy?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, I think thrift store shopping has actually enjoyed a real growing trend right now. And I think it's probably based on, you know, this both of the desires to be frugal as well as being environmentally friendly. And I hope that this is actually a trend to stay as well. And the other sort of similar trends that is along the line of shopping at thrift stores is for people who basically just rent their outfits. And I have, I think, colleagues who actually subscribe to rental services because and use that as a way to basically stop buying things.
Oh, another good, interesting development. And again, thank you, Judith, for calling. Tim emailed with a book recommendation as well. The book he recommends is The Story of Stuff by Annie Leonard. It's a very easy read and very enlightening. You agree with that?
Oh, completely. I think sometimes it just sort of makes you want, you know, I guess, a lot of the times when we buy something at the store, we never really think about where did it come from and where does it go as it leaves our, you know, house when we throw it in the trash or when you send it off. So I think it is good to actually have things like this to remind us of, you know, because our consumption decision doesn't just stop at the point where we pick up the stuff and pay for it. It comes before and it goes after.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, Nancy. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. It was a lot of fun talking with you. I hope we have a chance to do it again. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Larry. I really had fun talking to you and all the listeners as well. Appreciate that.
I thank you again. Nancy Wong, Professor of Consumer Science at the UW School of Human Ecology. She's also the Consumer Science Department Chair, and she holds the Kohl's Chair in Retail Innovation. It was great to have a chance to talk with her today. If you'd like to hear more about our guests or show topics, check out our new blog. Just go to WPR.org/Larry to see what's there. And a reminder, if you missed part of our show or just want to hear it again, you can always go to our archives at WPR.org/Larry. To hear recordings of our broadcasts. You can search by topic or date, and they go back for years. We're reusing those topics. Thanks very much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mealer.